coming up next. Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training, with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
People become consultants for a lot of reasons. They're sick of the corporate grind. They long for independence. And for people out of work 2 years and more, it seems to be a viable option. Ah, to be your own boss. According to the second annual Solopreneur Life 2011 end-of-year survey, these one-person consultancies, or in today's parlance, solopreneurs, have high hopes for 2012. 53% said they expect a revenue increase of 20% or more over last year. This is perhaps in spite of the fact that everyone seems to be hanging up a shingle these days. One of the biggest challenges consultants face is getting new business. Wooing a client is sometimes compared to dating. This clip from the movie He's Just Not Into You could be taken from the consultant's and client's playbook.
So I would love to call you sometime. Do you have a card?
Of course.
Oh, great. Look forward to hearing from you, Gigi.
Oh, wait. Are you hearing from me or am I getting a call?
We'll talk. We'll get in touch.
Oh, oopsie. You did it again. Very vague. You know what? Let's just say that you'll call me and then we can skip all the nonsense.
Goodbye, Eugene.
I think I figured it out.
He is not interested.
Working for yourself is no windfall. The Solopreneur Life survey also said nearly 70% netted no more than $40,000 in salary and profit, making it at best a lucrative sideline. Despite these low wages, more than half said their quality of life improved in 2011, and nearly half said they took little or no vacation. And most solopreneurs are skating on thin ice. Nearly 60% have a month or less of cash on reserve.
Hello, I hear you are a consultant. Can you help me? What is your expertise? I want to fly around the world and consult. Okay, do you have any expertise at all? No. You expect someone to pay you to be a consultant with no expertise? Yes, and fly me in business class. If someone hires you as a consultant, what will you do? I will stay in nice hotels and tell people more experienced than me what to do. You expect them to listen to you? Yes. Why would they listen to you? Because I'm a consultant. And they are paying me a load of money. They will force you to do twice as much work as you agreed to. I won't mind. They will pay me lots of money. They will insist you deliver extra presentations to people who have nothing to do with your work. I will give brilliant advice. Your clients won't care. I will write brilliant business plans. They will toss them in the trash the moment you leave their office. Business leaders and powerful government officials will gather in conference rooms to listen to my every word. They will send junior staff as punishment. And they will go to your presentation only because their boss forced them. They will imagine stabbing you in the eye. Then they will leave and immediately forget you ever existed. Clients will have no respect for you. They will respect my testoni shoes. Even before you start working for them, they will instinctively understand you are a consultant because you are incapable of doing anything productive. I will specialize in change management. Nobody has any idea what that means. And business process re-engineering. Can you do anything useful? I'm good at PowerPoint. Why didn't you say so? You have a bright future in consulting.
And we have two guests here today who have made a success of being consultants. Barry Zimmerman is the founder of Biz and Rich, a community that helps solos work together and land clients. Ron Kranz of Beyond the Benchmark is an expert on leadership, strategic business development, and more. Minding Your Business is about giving you the tools and information you need to start, run, and grow your small business. Are you starting one? Do you own a business? Tell us about it or ask questions. We'll answer on the air by calling 866-712-1300 or give us a shout at our Minding Your Business Facebook page. Now let's hear what some clients have to say about their experiences in this clip from Beyond the Benchmark promotion.
It's like a miniature refresher of an MBA. It's an outside perspective that's broader than my own thinking.
It has given me people to reflect off of, people that have been there and done that. They can give me information. about our situation, about the challenges we face.
It's a time for us to work on our businesses and not in our businesses. We focus our time in looking at different challenges, to step back and look at the big picture and reprioritize what we do on a daily basis.
Any business owner needs to have a place to share what they're facing. Otherwise, you're out there by yourself. And I don't care what level of business you're in. You need to talk to like-minded people. You need to talk to people with experience.
Going solo as a consultant is by no way an easy business model. Small companies can't often afford the services of a consultant. Big companies don't typically hire a sole practitioner. What is a consultant to do? Enter BizEnrich, a collaborative community of business consultants. Barry Zimmerman, founder and CEO, has a roster of 73 so-called experts in Seattle and Portland, and Barry's job is to connect them with the business leaders who can benefit from their expertise and are willing to pay for it. Prior to launching BizEnrich, Barry was co-owner of Whitecap North America, a marketing firm. But his longest engagement was at the United Parcel Service for 20 years, where he ultimately had the chance to be involved in several startup ventures. Barry has a degree in secondary education from Seattle Pacific University and has studied international trade and technology management. Here to tell us what it takes to get companies to hire consultants, Barry Zimmerman. Welcome to Minding Your Business.
Hi, Robin.
Why did you start BizEnrich?
Well, 3 years ago, I found myself as an independent business expert. I was doing marketing consulting and had some clients and was really enjoying kind of interacting with clients. But I was also realizing that there were some pieces of being a consultant, a solo consultant, that I really did not like at all. I hated the isolation of working alone. I hated the distractions of that kept me from really doing the work that I wanted to be doing. And I was frustrated with the inconsistent pipeline of business. And, you know, it's very typical to be caught up in a project and be working on that project with your client and ignore some of the other things about your business that you forget that you need to be doing.
That's a common problem where while you're working, you don't have time to market. While you're marketing, you don't have time to do the work.
That's exactly right. And so I call it the psychotic life of the solopreneur and that you're either getting the work or you're doing the work. And as I was networking and interacting with other solo consultants around the area, I realized that they were suffering from some of the same situations. And as I'm hearing them talk about their problems and their challenges, I go, problem smells like an opportunity. So I spent 6 months working on a business plan to figure out how I could leverage my network, leverage my skills as a connector, and put together a plan that actually helped them market their services as well. And we each helped each other get work.
How is that going? How's business?
Business is growing. It, you know, in this down economy, the group is growing. We're almost 3 years old, and we've gone from zero to, as you said, 73 members in 3 years. And we continue to grow every month and add new business experts to the roster in both Seattle and Portland.
What types of experts do you have?
We've got leadership experts, you know, business leadership, operations, accounting and finance, legal, HR. We've got efficiency experts and people that specialize in project management. Actually, quite a wide variety, marketing and sales training. So just about any kind of issue that you would run across in your business, we've got somebody either within the group or we know somebody a degree away that we can hook you up with to help get that expertise and expert that you need to grow your business.
It seems to me, too, that there might be some overlap in skill sets.
Yes.
Because sometimes somebody might have some background in marketing as well as operations.
Right. Yeah. So other consortiums and networking organizations that are similar to us tend to have one expert per expertise or practice area. And I found that to be rather concerning because who am I as the leader of the organization to pick the marketing person or the operations management person that's best for all the clients that are out there? So we kind of retooled that thinking. And what we found is that we may have 5 operations management consultants, but when you get right down to it and you get past the title on their card, they're all very different. Their expertise is different, their experience, their personalities, their approach. And so that way, we actually give the clients or the prospects that are looking to hire one of those people some choices. So they can come to us and say, hey, I'm looking for an operations management consultant. I can say, here's three. Pick from these three, and I might even recommend one of them for them to contact first. And that way, the prospect gets to define what best is.
It is kind of like dating, isn't it? We're here with Barry Zimmerman from BizEnrich talking about consulting, and I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. So what kinds of businesses are more likely to hire BizEnrich?
So typically, our experts focus on small to medium-sized businesses, privately held organizations. Some of our members work with large multinational companies. Some of them work with government organizations or nonprofits. But for the most part, the small to medium-sized business is our sweet spot.
What I find sometimes, though, is that small businesses, and small can be... It's a pretty wide definition.
Right. Whose definition are we going to go with today?
Right. Small can be a solopreneur themselves, a one-person company, all the way up to, I think, like $10 million in revenue, something like that. So where are you really looking for? It seems to me a lot of small businesses can't really afford to hire consultants.
Well, and it really depends on the specific expert. Some of our experts focus on, they segment their niche by size of company. And others don't. So it really depends. We are attractive to a large group of business owners or business leaders because of that fact. So we don't specifically focus on company by size.
So at the end of the day, it really is a people business. And you really are there just to bring people together to see if there's that connection.
Well, yeah, people hire people. People work with people. I mean, everything we do is about relationships and people, and we actually like to focus on the relationships, not necessarily the transactions at the time, because what we find is that I may be working with a client right now on a project, and in the course of conversation, I'm realizing that through those conversations that they need assistance with somebody else that for an expertise that they don't have that I have access to through my own group.
I think that's one of the benefits of working with consultants is that you don't always realize what your problems are or how to resolve them. And a consultant is, by their very nature, looking to identify those problems, and then they would know how to put on the right personnel to work those out.
Exactly. And many times, especially entrepreneurs that haven't been in business for very long, they don't have the experience working with a consultant. And, working with a consultant or a contractor is different than working with an employee.
We're speaking with Barry Zimmerman of BizEnrich. I'm Robin Block. We'll be right back. We're here with Barry Zimmerman from BizEnrich talking about consulting. What can a typical consultant expect to earn?
Oh, my. Well, that's a pretty broad question, and it depends on not only their niche and their expertise, but it also kind of depends on their approach. But in terms of annual salary, I know people that are making as little as $25,000 a year, for a solopreneur, $40,000 a year is not uncommon. And if you're making six figures, you're doing very well for yourself. And, I'm speaking kind of anecdotally, but the experts that I know, most of them are making between $50,000 and $75,000 a year.
Oh, okay. Hmm. A livable wage to some degree, but not what's expected.
Right. Yes.
What kind of range in hourly rates are you seeing?
Well, okay, so that brings up a very interesting topic, and hourly rates are something that I really am not a big fan of. For a couple reasons, and one of which being is that then you're really being paid for your effort, not for results. And so I advocate getting paid by the project or by specific, tangible, measurable results. And it could be, in the form of actually a piece of some kind of gain that you're attaining for an organization.
Some target objective.
Right, right.
What I often find, though, is that when you're first talking to someone, me being a consultant myself in marketing, is that people, you don't even know what they're going to need yet. and they already want to know how much you charge. They don't even want to start engaging until they have some idea of what kind of numbers they're looking at. How do you respond to that?
Well, so that's part of the sales process scoping the work. And the really good consultants are very good at very quickly kind of scoping in what the actual issues are, not just the symptoms, but the causes of the symptoms and how they can obtain some measurable results for them.
Right. So you could give a range. You could say it's going to be between $2,000 and $10,000. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, that's like super ballpark.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, depending on how savvy you are, you give them a big range and you come in under the top and, above the low end. And so, you don't want it to come across as sleazy or insincere in any way. But until the expert really knows what the issues are or what the scope of work that is that they're going to be doing, it's very difficult to ballpark that.
I agree. But now if somebody said to you, oh, I just want to meet with you for an hour.
Oh.
Then you have to give your hourly, right?
No, not necessarily.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. For an initial consultation, for just a conversation, most of the people that I know give that first half hour or hour for
once you get beyond the free stuff,
right?
Is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So there's a piece of that that's still part of the sales process that can you expect to get money from your clients for your sales process and scoping what the work is? Maybe in some cases you can. That, if I'm going to come in for a half a day, I'm going to charge you a flat rate. And if we decide to go beyond a proposal or an outline of what I would do to help you, that amount that you paid is applied to the full project. So there's ways to step into, projects a little bit at a time. One of the things that's really important to understand about just consultants is that because it's a relationship, and as your clips kind of alluded to, you're really dating with somebody to get to know them. And
when do you start talking about the babies?
Yeah. Well, and you go on one first date, and then you have several others before you actually decide to take the relationship a little farther. And, the babies better come along a lot later.
It seems to me also that you need to measure the price sensitivity of the potential client as a consultant.
Right. Absolutely. And so the savvy experts, the ones that know their target market and their prospects really well, they have a good sensitivity for that already, and that's part of their reason for being there. Is that's a good client or a good prospect for them.
Do any of your experts start thinking about how can I fill the shelf with products that satisfy a smaller clientele that might not be able to afford my expertise?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the ways to minimize the cost for small businesses is to go to seminars and workshops. And the information you get is a little broader and certainly not focused on your business specifically. Another way to do that, and many of our experts actually do seminars and workshops. It also gives you a chance to kind of test the credibility of the expert that you're interviewing or that you're working with. Another way to get some good advice and information for your business is to join a peer advisory type of group, and where you can actually sit in a room with a dozen businesses that are approximately the same size but in different industries, and you learn from each other. And if you've got a really good facilitator, they're going to walk you through some of the challenges and some of the solutions for that.
We're speaking with Barry Zimmerman of BizEnrich, and I thought this might be a perfect time to introduce Ron Kranz. Among other things, Ron Kranz of the Peer Leadership Exchange is an executive coach. His 30 years of experience span the management consultant landscape from strategic planning through business development. Prior to starting his own consultancy, Ron was senior VP at civil engineering firm David Evans & Associates for over 15 years. He was responsible for growing this national design and consulting firm into an $18 million business with over 20% in profit. Ron graduated cum laude from Southern Oregon University with a degree in biology and geography. Ron is also a peer advisory group charter member of BizEnrich. Ron, welcome to Minding Your Business.
Thank you, Robin. It's a pleasure to be here.
How did a degree in biology and geography land you in your career as a leadership consultant?
Yeah, well, you brought up my college education there. That's where I was kind of dating myself. So Yeah, I earned a degree in biology and geography, and that's an interesting question because, like most small business owners, you start with some technical skill. You learn how to do something, and then you start to get into the business side of things. So in the past, I've been a wetland biology expert working as an environmental scientist, and what I learned was is that I had to market fine work, deliver on that work, and continue to do that over and over, regardless about my business background.
Somebody still has to find a way to pay the bills.
That's exactly, and you're looking for revenue generators. They all start with some technical skill, if it's from financial planning to biology or whatever technical discipline you might have. And what happens is that you learn the business side of things, particularly if you work in the private sector, and eventually you end up getting your MBA by the seat of the pants by sitting in the chair. And eventually that's how I became, you know, a top executive within David Evans & Associates and running their office and being part of their executive committee.
Did you get any formal training in addition to the seat of the pants MBA that you refer to?
My business was all either, you know, my marketing skills seemed to just come to me naturally because of my personality. But other than that, I had a mentor within, you know, the architectural, engineering, construction industry, and he taught me how to track the billing and do job costing and all that inside business activity. So it really came from a mentor.
So let's come up to the present. You're giving leadership classes, business development workshops, that kind of thing, not only in the field you started in.
Yeah, I work in all different kinds of industry now. I've been out on my own as a solo entrepreneur for the last 8 years. And while my background comes out of the architectural, engineering, construction industry, I now work with manufacturers, other service providers, distributors, a variety of different businesses. And in fact, the peer groups that I put together require the members to come from different disciplines because different industries, because that's where the broadening of the perspective comes from.
I totally agree with that. That's why I think that's a very valuable addition that consultants bring to the table, because they have worked with so many different businesses that they can introduce new ideas and inject new energy and new points of view.
And they're all learning how to run their business. A carpenter who enjoyed doing carpentry now runs a general contracting
right,
business.
And there's that famous book, The E-Myth, where,
exactly.
I mean, but I'm sure millions of consultants said this before, that you have to work on your business, not just in your business. And just because you're an expert like a photographer or a builder or a plumber or something, that doesn't mean you're going to know how to market to customers.
Exactly, so, and they usually are too busy working in their business to take that time out to work on their business.
Absolutely. In your LinkedIn resume, you talk about something called business reconceptualization, which we're going to get back to.
Okay.
But I think it's an interesting point that what happens is you start to package the ideas that you have around what works, what doesn't. And then you repackage, and many consultants do this, they repackage it into a methodology. We're speaking with Barry Zimmerman of BizEnrich, and we're speaking to Ron Krantz, also of BizEnrich, and we will be right back. Our show today is all about consulting here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. We've been talking about consulting, everything about it. Are you a consultant? Have you ever worked with consultants? Give us a call. Our lines are open at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We're also on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. So where are we? We were talking about business reconceptualization with Ron Krantz.
Great topic. Glad you asked the questions. So what is business reconceptualization? In a nutshell, we've come from the agricultural age into the industrial age, and then most people believe and see and recognize that we are in the information age. And actually, the information age has passed us, and we are now in the conceptual age.
I would say we're in the data age.
In the data
almost.
Age. Well, business is now looking at, particularly after the economic downturn, everyone's looking at how do I do business differently. And in fact, because we've moved through the information age into the conceptual age, we need to reconceptualize how we go about doing business. And that's really about creating sustainable value creation in your business. And when you look at the value in a business, Most of it is not on the balance sheet. That is, it comes from intangible assets. So what are the intangible intellectual capital that you have in your business that's actually creating the value? And if you have things that aren't creating value, then those really should be eliminated. And then it's about trying to find a market that's a market niche where there is no or limited competition and serving that narrow focus versus a broader focus.
How is this very different than how we've always done business?
Because it comes to the third step, which is the delivery. And that's delivering your value creation intellectual capital to your market niche without owning that delivery process, but controlling it. Most business owners feel that they need to own the process to be able to control it.
Can you give me an example?
Well, just a real simple example. If you have a delivery business and you know, you're a metal manufacturer, you got to get your metal parts to your client. And so you have a truck sitting out in your parking lot with the driver standing there waiting for it to be loaded. So you are paying that employee, you're paying that employee's benefits, and you've got that asset of a truck sitting there. And you want that to be delivered at a certain time. And so you feel you have to control that driver and truck to be able to get it there at a certain time. But if you could actually outsource that to a logistically to a freight company and pay for them when they're only delivering it, then you can lower your cost and increase your profits.
So outsourcing has always made sense.
Well,
do you think it's different now? Or,
well,
or
most people, you know, immediately when you say outsourcing, they immediately think, well, send that overseas.
No, no, but I mean just it's the build-buy decision. Do we do it ourselves or do we hire it out?
If you're in business and you have accounting staff, they're not creating value in your business. They are actually a cost center. Mm-hmm. So if you could outsource that accounting function to a expert accounting firm and they can do it better and faster, then you'll actually pay less money than have a higher level expertise, and that'll generate profits for you.
Yeah, very.
So is part of the reconceptualization not only reducing costs, but looking at ways to turn cost centers into value generators or value centers as well?
What's generating the value in your business? And if it's not, then you shouldn't own it.
So that's the reconceptualizing part,
exactly.
Is to be able to identify where the real value is in the business.
Exactly.
Now, I don't think of that as being a new idea, but I think for some people it might be a new idea. In how do I apply it to my business? And it seems to me there might be some technologies involved because we have more information than we had before. I mean, even the idea of intellectual capital, IP, property, it seems that that's relatively a new idea. And if we can find new ways to look for how do we use information that comes out of our company. For example, I knew about this company I read about years ago that made skateboards. And they would put up their designs on the web and people would comment on the designs. And they realized that data was really valuable, because they could start to predict what the fashion statement would be for skateboards. So instead of making only their money on making skateboards, they started to sell the data too. So it seems to me that's how business might be done differently today because of the new technologies that are available, and they discovered new IP, new intellectual property.
So there's a difference between intellectual capital and intellectual property. So when we look at intellectual capital, it can really be broken down into three different areas: human capital, structural capital, which includes IP, by the way, and then relational capital. So let me just role play.
I like that one, the relational. I'm sure Barry has a lot to say about relational, relational capital. But
yeah.
Continue.
And we're entering a fairly, you know, complex topic area here.
I'm all about it.
But let me just use the role play a little bit with your skateboard example. So if you are really good at skateboard design and you make the best skateboard that's out that you can put out there that's really, you know, unique and different and people really want it.
Great wheels.
Where do great wheels come from? The person who makes the board is probably not a great wheel maker. And the wheel maker is probably not a great board maker. And in fact, you're not either one. You're just a great designer. You should not be trying to make boards and wheels. You should be outsourcing that to the best board and wheel maker you can find.
That's direct advice from Ron Kranz. And we're here with Barry Zimmerman as well. They're both involved with BizEnrich, which is a community of consulting experts. We would love to hear from you. If you are a consultant or have worked with consultants, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. So back to our guests. We're talking about outsourcing. We're talking about should you make your wheels or should you not make your wheels on your, you know. So, but then it seems to me that there becomes this big coordination activity you have to perform if you're using all these other vendors, outsource components, that kind of thing. I mean, we've seen it with maybe Boeing. I mean, I know that's a big business example. But look at the issues they have with supply chain management and all that kind of thing. How does a small business person keep all their ducks in a row?
Oh, they need help from consultants.
Okay, okay.
Somebody's that has walked those shoes before, walked that path in their shoes before. Yeah, been there, done that, have the experience, understand what's in the path ahead, how to deal with the issues that are going to come up before their major problems.
So we know some of the benefits of consultants. I just want to throw this out here. I noticed on your website, you don't even call people consultants. You call them independent experts. And I'm kind of wondering if that was on purpose.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I view a consultant as somebody with expertise that delivers their expertise in a very specific way. So business experts include consultants, advisors, coaches, mentors, and teachers, speakers. So all those, you know, as long as we have a business expertise, that's the general term that we use at BizEnrich. And how they choose to deliver their expertise is another piece. And that's what a consultant is, somebody that does work for a client.
How is working with consultants in your group, BizEnrich, different than hiring a management consulting firm that's already established?
Yeah. So part of the value of hiring a BizEnrich independent expert is that you can be assured that the experts have been vetted. So let's compare the independent expert in BizEnrich versus one that's not in BizEnrich. That really, because we pre-vet our experts, we vet for experience, expertise. We want to make sure that they've been in their field for at least 10 years. And we also want to make sure that they have a good sense of culture and sense of integrity about how they go about doing business. So those are some of the things that we vet for. And so the idea is that when you come across a BizEnrich business expert, that if you're considering hiring them, that it should, having that BizEnrich label should help get you to a decision of yes or no faster. And we hope that is yes, obviously. Because of that, it's going to help you learn to trust those people faster because of the relationship that they have with BizEnrich.
We have somebody who tweeted us from Collaboration HQ, and they were saying, consider the value of collaboration to the consultant and business leaders in all sizes organizations. So continuing with that.
Yeah, so within our organization, collaboration is a theme that we talk about quite often, and it's actually part of our culture. And there are three components to collaboration that we employ in our relationships. The first one is cooperation. And typically that's what people think of when they think of collaboration, that the two are interchangeable or synonymous. And really, collaboration has two more components, the second of which is communication. So there's clear, open, timely, complete, honest communication between the parties. And then the third piece is, and the most defining, and how BizEnrich members and BizEnrich experts communicate with each other and relate to each other, and that's through commitment. So cooperation and communication and the commitment to each other's success is really the defining piece for us in our relationships. And we take that collaborative type of environment or collaborative spirit with our relationships with our clients as well. And so we're committed to their success.
Ron, you had something to add?
Well, I really like the idea of collaboration and relationship, and that in defining what a consultant does. A consultant's kind of a generic term for me. It's actually, not one that I have a positive response to. And that's because consultants typically are stereotyped as, you come in and you do a project and you get out. And this idea of relationship building and having the right fit, collaborating with your client and with other team members, really creates a team member feel and something that's ongoing and not something that's a come in, do a project, and step out. Now, we can do that, and I'm involved in projects like that, but most of the things that I'm involved are long-term relationship-oriented activities with my clients that have a very unclear of when they're actually going to end because they're ongoing.
We have another tweet from Score More Sales. She's listening in Boston. How would you suggest business experts collaborate more and why?
Oh, well, great topic. So collaborating more with existing clients is really important. And we talk about, in our organization, we talk about co-marketing. And really what that is collaborative marketing. And if you take it a step further, when it gets right down to it, it's about referrals. So the way that we can collaborate with each other and co-market for each other is as we're working with our existing clients, we are very tuned into listening to the needs of the client in a much broader space, not just narrowly focused on the work that we're doing. And as we're asking general questions and we're looking for opportunities where to solve their problems, we're really looking to put our partners to work.
We're here with Barry Zimmerman and Ron Kranz with BizEnrich. We'll be right back.
And now we return to Minding Your Business with Robin Block on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. Once again, here's Robin.
I'm here with Barry Zimmerman of BizEnrich and Ron Kranz of Beyond the Benchmark talking about consulting. And you're listening to Minding Your Business. If you have ideas or questions for our guests, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We're here to answer your questions on the air. I wanted to speak with you, Ron, about leadership. You do a lot of leadership consulting. My main question there, and I was speaking to another consultant about this yesterday who does some similar work. Often in consulting, we say that you have to figure out what the problem is before you can fix it. How do you get a leader to admit they're bad at leadership?
Which is, how do you get them to admit that they're the problem?
Exactly.
And so my approach to leadership is really a five-level approach, right? And that really starts with understanding yourself. If you're not really able to lead yourself, it's going to be difficult to lead other people.
I agree, but how do you work with getting a client to recognize their own foibles?
You ask good questions, and you ask the questions that no one else will ask them, because business owner or CEO is not getting asked the things from their employees, from their clients, even from their vendors that they really should be hearing, because everybody's, looking up to the CEO.
Do you think it helps that you have a bit of length in your experience?
I think that helps create credibility, but it really comes to asking the fearless question.
But how do you get in there to ask those fearless questions? That's what I'm trying to...
You develop relationships. Of course.
So it's a bit of attraction marketing first. You let them know what you're about, and maybe they seek you out a little bit, and then you...
Most of the clients that I get are referral-based.
There you
so
go.
That's, again, where we just underscore the referral process and the relationship process. In fact, when you talk about collaboration, Barry and I, through BizEnrich and some of the other members, are actually developing the referral-centric marketing approach.
So, Barry, you had a comment?
Yeah, so, I think part of the way that CEOs learn to answer the hard questions that Ron's talking about, is that through those relationships, you develop the know, like, and trust, and get to trust very quickly and very easily. And knowing that you're working or your relationship is based on trust, and that it's a safe environment, that it's based on helping each other really become better at what they could be, that I think that that really makes a big difference as well.
Safe environment. That's critical to getting the business owner or CEO to open up. The peer advisory groups that I build and lead through the Peer Leadership Exchange, creating the environment that allows the tough question to be asked in the room, either through a one-on-one coaching session or in that group of peers, creates the conversations that are unlike elsewhere and creates relationships among those business owners that they just don't find anywhere else. And that's where the value gets created for them.
Where does social media fit into this relationship building stuff for you? Oh, it's complete silence.
Well, you know, social media for me is a place for, you know, for branding to take place, for me to get my name out there, for me to share some of my ideas, write some blog or say some tweet that it catches a little attention that allows somebody to find me and discover me that wouldn't elsewise.
So that's like the tip of the iceberg kind of thing?
Well, not for me. For me, the social media in terms of relationship is all about carrying on the conversation, and not only at the beginning of the relationship and getting to know somebody, being able to go to their LinkedIn or Facebook page or, you know, Biznic, whatever the appropriate page is where you find them, you know, is to learn more about them. But it's also to carry on the conversation that keeps us connected.
That's what people often don't think about in social media. One is the, how do I build awareness for myself and attract people to me where I'm hanging out? And then the part two that, Barry, you're alluding to is the engagement piece.
Right.
How do I keep top of mind with them? How do we have an ongoing conversation and start building on that relationship?
Right. You know, and it's a very simple three-step process. I mean, at the beginning, you're out there creating a strategy or you performing tactics to inform people about who you are and what you do and how you do it. And then that moves into connecting with them in some way. And, you know, using social media is a great way to connect with a lot of people at the same time. And then
if they're paying attention.
I'm sorry, did you say something?
If they're paying attention. Oh, very funny.
And
okay,
so inform, connect, and then the third step in the, you know, of, you know, intimacy in the relationship is all about engagement and getting engaged. And at that point, then, you know, you're having a relationship or you've got a relation that's probably deeper than just social media.
I would hope so.
Yes.
I mean, people don't spend money just based on a tweet, you might say.
Well, if it's a small amount of money, if it's a low risk.
Like 10 cents, I guess.
But. Well, even a couple bucks, you know, off of social media, somebody recommends that, you know, download $1.50 white paper or something.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, nominal things. But, you know, when it comes to consulting, so take it full circle back around to consulting, now you've got to go a lot farther down the path towards trust before you can engage somebody for consulting, because the risk is so much higher, the risk to your business and the financial risk and what you're putting out there. So in that context, relationships and the path from informed to connect to engage is extremely important.
What do people who want to hang up their own shingle fail to realize before they actually go into consulting?
From my point of view, the one piece that they forget about or omit or don't know enough about is that they have to be expert marketers of themselves. And in order to do that, they have to know themselves. And when they're really good at aligning their core competencies and their skill set with their bullseye client, then that becomes a lot easier. And some of the most successful experts that I'm around are the ones that not only align their core with their bullseye prospects, but they also have created a very clear message that's repeatable, so that they can transfer that to their referral sources and referral partners and get that message out to others. And that means that they've surrounded themselves with people that know, like, and trust them and are committed to, you know, to their success.
It seems to me that companies, at least some of the larger ones, are reluctant to hire solos. And BizEnrich kind of solves that problem because you create collaborative environments and people can go in as a team. Why do you think they are reluctant to hire solo consultants?
Well, there's that risk of, you know, what happens if something happens to this person? You know, that there's no depth or follow-up. And actually, at BizEnrich, we're finding that many of our consultants are actually partnering and bidding on projects with two people or more on projects, and there are things that they could never get on their own. So in that context, they're not just independents, they're collaborative experts.
I would love to talk more about this topic. There are so many different avenues I haven't even addressed, but we're out of time. You've been listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'd like to thank my guest, Barry Zimmerman of BizEnrich. To learn more about the services of their experts or to join the community, visit BizEnrich.com. And Ron Krantz, to learn more about his services, visit BeyondTheBenchmark.com. For an archive of today's program, links to our guest websites, or to sponsor this show, check out our website at MYB Media. Support for Minding Your Business is provided in part by Sandler Training. Learn more at toptiertraining.sandler.com. From Money Radio, KKOL 1300 in Seattle, this has been Minding Your Business, tools and information for the business of your life and the life of your business. I'm your host and producer, Robin Block.
You've been listening to Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training with Robin Block. Real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with two B's at blockbeta.com. That's Robin at blockbeta.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.